Welcome to Monday. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's Nick Wright. Joining us this morning is Bart Scott.
What up, man?
What up, Bart Scott?
I'm in this box seat. That's
how. So, we usually air five, but today we did.
Yeah, we're right next to each other.
Get yourself some PRL,
nope.
Brother.
Nope.
I mean, ASAP, bring it over.
12 games on the NFL docket yesterday. I hope, Bart, you, like me, watched all 36 hours of them, because who needs a life when you've got football? Let us start with the big one. Game of the week. Dak Prescott on the Dallas Cowboys taking on Tom Brady and the Patriots in Foxborough. Pick it up in the first quarter. No score. Also, Brady to the rookie N'Keal Harry for his first career touchdown. It was a beauty. Pats take a 7-0 lead. We jump to the fourth. Cowboys down four and driving. Dak to Ezekiel Elliott for the first down, but Dallas penalized for a questionable tripping call. They got two tripping calls in this game. Couple of plays later, Dak finds Amari Cooper on a beautiful 4th-and-11 play. Big first down, but the play is reviewed, and you can see the ball hits the ground. Turnover on down. Zero catches for Amari on the day. Patriots hold on for the 13-9 win. All right, Nick. This was a game the Cowboys could have won, very easily could have won this game. Who do you blame for Dallas's loss?
Well, I'll tell you first who I'm not going to blame. I'm not going to blame the officials. The tripping calls were awful. There had been 7 tripping calls in the league all year. There were 2 in this game. They were both questionable. But guess what? Welcome to playing the New England Patriots the last 2 decades. In Gillette, outside of Gillette, there's going to be usually at least 1 call a game that goes in their favor. Bake that into the math when you're figuring out if you can beat them. And had that last one not been called tripping, and they had gotten the 3rd-and-1, they still got 63 yards to go to score on the best defense in football. So who do I blame? I blame Jason Garrett and the coaching staff. The reason I picked the New England Patriots in this game was not only because of home field, but because of the giant discrepancy in coaching, and it showed up in every facet of the game. Whether it was the Cowboys special teams that were high schoolish, whether it's punt, their own punt coverage, whether it's their own kick returns, whatever it is, they get it. We didn't show it in the highlight, but what led to the Patriots' 1 touchdown was a blocked punt, something they did against Buffalo to get the deciding touchdown. They then got it against Dallas to get the deciding touchdown. They couldn't recover their own kickoffs. They couldn't figure out the Patriots are kicking it short. All of that up to and then at the end of the game, the Patriots had allowed 2 red zone drives all season at home. The Cowboys got 2 of them in this football game, and they did the thing on Friday we said they couldn't do. We said if they are settling for 27-yard field goals, they've lost.
Also a coaching decision.
Right. Well, exactly right. Well, they kicked a 27-yarder and a 29-yarder, and the last one is inexplicable and unforgivable. You have a 4th-and-7. Shouldn't even been in the 4th-and-7 if you would have run the ball earlier on the downs. But regardless, down 7 points with 6 minutes left. Kicking a field goal there is a give-up move for a coach that appears to be out of answers if he ever had them. So the Cowboys were a more talented team. The Cowboys were the team that needed it more. The Cowboys were the team that in a lot of aspects of the game, aside from their passing attack into the Patriots' pass defense, you would have given the check mark in their favor. Hell, they even have the better special teams in theory because they got a real kicker and the Patriots on the 3rd kicker. And they couldn't score a single touchdown. They couldn't put themselves in position to score a touchdown. I put that on Jason Garrett.
To Nick's point, I have to agree with him. It definitely has to be the coaching staff. When you think about the decisions made, you talk about in the red zone going forward on 3rd down with a screen pass, a low percentage play against a team that's coached so well, like the Patriots. But if I say the name Joe Judge to people, they wouldn't know who that is. But, you know, one thing that the Patriots do, they put an emphasis on every facet of the game. When you talk about those mishandled kickoffs and things of that, you're talking about bloop kicks. You're talking about understanding the elements, understanding that you're making people feel the ball that aren't used to feeling the ball. And even if they, you know, catch it, they're not athletic enough because they're part of the wedge to be able to move the ball. And you think about Jason Garrett and you think about this team always getting off the slow starts. How are you going to beat a team like the Patriots in Gillette when you start off in a 10-0 deficit? And that's because of the coach. That's because coaching. That's because Slater, you know, they should have known that they had a special teams unit that really was unique. And what the Patriots do that's different from other teams, they put starters on special teams because it's just that important. And you think about Bill Belichick, his background as special teams, he was the special special team coordinator before. And something is going on with this Dallas team, why they can't get off the fast starts. In 8 of their 11 games, they've started allowing the opposing team to get ahead. And you hear the frustration in Jerry Jones's voice, because he's saying he shouldn't be this frustrated from a team that's this talented. They've gone out and got Robert Quinn. They've gone out and paid Ezekiel Elliott. And an honorary mention has to go to Dak Prescott, because what we've seen when teams beat the Patriots, and it's only been one this year, but when we've seen teams that beat the Patriots, it's because their quarterback was special. Now, Dak did nothing to lose the game, but he wasn't elite. He didn't make the winning plays that ultimately good quarterbacks, franchise quarterbacks, do when you have to beat, you know, Tom Brady and the New England
Patriots. And just real quick, you said people don't know the name Joe Judge. Joe Judge, the Patriots special teams coordinator,
yeah,
who just outclassed any coach on the Cowboys coaching staff the whole game.
What was the stat that you gave us on Friday about where the Patriots are when leading at the half?
They were 104-1 since Brady took over at home when leading at half, which was another reason why you looked at the drive, right? People are going to focus on the drive at the end of the game where they settled for a field goal, but the drive at the end of the half when they settled, yep, for a field goal. Like, you are playing in the toughest environment in sports.
Yeah.
And what you can't do is, you mentioned Dak, it would be an honorary mention for blame. After the punt is blocked, right, and you're down 7-0, what you can't allow is the avalanche of mistakes. Yep. And Dak makes his one big mistake three plays later. The Cowboys did not have a plan. When they got down in the red zone after the one big pass play the whole game,
yeah,
the Randall Cobb play, where, by the way, that one almost turned into a disaster because, right, the ball's punched out when Cobb's running up the sideline. He's just lucky enough to bring it back in. You have to know you are in four down territory immediately.
Charlie.
And when you run the ball with Zeke on first down and getting a 2nd and 7, when Zeke actually didn't get as many touches as he should have, but he was effective, what you need to say there as a coaching staff is, it is situational football. A few weeks ago, the Cowboys got criticized for going to Zeke too often. It was in perfect conditions. Dak was playing great. This was terrible conditions. Dak was struggling. 2nd and 7 inside the 15-yard line. The question needs to be, if we hand the ball to Zeke on 2nd down, on 3rd down, and on 4th down if we need to, can we get 7 yards? Can we just run Zeke repeatedly till we score a touchdown? Instead, he didn't touch the ball again. You throw a ball to Jason Witten, and then you throw a ball to Blake Jarwin, the only pass all game, by the way, that crossed the mouth of the goal line, the only pass that, if caught, could have actually immediately resulted in a touchdown, but Dak throws it out the back of the end zone, and now you're kicking a field goal as opposed to going for it, even if you don't get it.
Right.
The Pats are backed up inside their own 15, and you're still, even after you made the field goal, they needed a touchdown. If they hadn't kicked the field goal, they needed a touchdown. It made no sense.
Bart, what does it say about this team that, once again, they fail to beat a team that's above 500? They can't beat good teams.
And we know that they're personal. They have one of the best rosters in the game. That's why the coach is on the hot seat. That's why he's been, you know, rumored to potentially, if he's let go, to be a head coach for the Giants.
Yep.
Also, I think the elephant in the room is Matt Rhule. We thought it would be Lincoln Riley, but Matt Rhule and what he's doing in Baylor, you know, I think it's really putting pressure on them, because, you know, we've seen this happen with Tampa Bay before, right? We've seen Tony Dungy, good coach, just couldn't get him over the hump. What did they do? They brought a guy in like Gruden, because they know the clock is running out. The clock is running out for this Cowboys
core.
Team, for
yeah.
this core, because they know once you play Dak Prescott, then now you're going to have to start losing some of your most valuable pieces. And, you know, this is the window that they're in. They went all in. They brought in Quinn. They traded for Bennett. They're trying to win right now. And I think they were fooled with the light schedule earlier, and they're in trouble because their schedule continues to get, you know, a lot harder on a short week against the Buffalo Bills that play tremendous defense with a quarterback that's unpredictable. He can be great, and he can be, you know, he can ruin the game. So this team is going to have to figure it out in short order. And if they really care about their coach, they're going to win some tough games, because if they don't make it to the playoffs, and listen, we know that the wild card player isn't coming from this
right.
team isn't coming from this division. If they do that with the best team arguably in the NFL.
With
Jason Garrett's going to be saying bye-bye.
Absolutely. Jason Garrett, I think the last truly important game Jason Garrett ever coached was last week. Or this past week. Yesterday. And we'll hear from Jerry Jones later. Jerry Jones seems to know it as well.
He seems to know that. And the Cowboys got a bit of a break in the Eagles' loss yesterday, which we'll talk about, but still was not a great afternoon for them. Time to put a grade on it, sponsored by CarMax. So it wasn't a pretty game for New England either. Few of them are on offense, but the Patriots did improve to 10-1 with the win yesterday. So, Nick, put a grade on the Patriots' overall performance.
I give them an A-. They did everything well except for throw the football. They were excellent on special teams. I don't care about the missed kicks. They got a third kicker that they've had, and they
also
were into
the weather
wind.
Was brutal.
But they were excellent in the other aspects of special teams. The defense continues to be exceptional. Coaching was an A++. So I give them an A-. The passing game drags them down a bit.
I give them a C+, because this is a heavily flawed football team. If you don't have the block punt, the interception in territory, this offense is not good enough, I feel, to get them deep in the NFL, get them deep in the playoffs. When you look at what they have to go through, the gauntlet, maybe Kansas City, they have to figure something out. I mean, the rumors of maybe Antonio Brown coming back, you may have to consider and say, you know what, we're going to do something that we normally don't do as the Patriots, because if Mohamed Sanu doesn't come back and be effective, and I don't know if he does come effective, they're the third best team, I believe, in the AFC.
Wow. All right. Well, meanwhile, the Patriots pick up their 18th straight regular season game. Bart didn't think it was a pretty one. It still counts in the win column. All right. Here we go. Carson Wentz and a day to forget against the Seahawks. So the Eagles quarterback finished with 2 interceptions and 2 lost fumbles. And to make matters worse, he suffered an injury to his throwing hand. X-rays were negative, but he will have additional tests to rule out any potential issues. Seahawks win 17-9, the final. Philadelphia now falls to 5-6 on the season. Here's Carson Wentz after the game.
I have to, be better. I have to lead this team better. I got to protect the football better. We can't put it on the ground the way we did. And it starts with me. And I'm frustrated. I know everyone's frustrated with this loss offensively. I mean, like I said, turning the ball over starts with me. I got to be better, and we will be.
Nick, is it starting to look like Carson Wentz isn't quite the quarterback that Philadelphia thought he was?
And he certainly isn't the quarterback I thought he was. And I tried to dive into this last night and this morning because I'm like, how could he look so good 2 years ago and look so average last year and bad this year? And what I realized was even 2 years ago, the only thing he did special were raw touchdown passes. His completion percentage was below league average. His yards per attempt was right at league average. His yards per game were around league average. But he had 33 touchdown passes in 13 games to only 7 interceptions, which is what was putting him in the driver's seat for MVP. But since then, his yards per attempt have gone down even further. His completion percentage right now is 21st in football. His yards per attempt are 30th. His passer rating is 20th. And yesterday was a perfect example of some of the issues with the Eagles' offense right now, most notably with Carson Wentz. Seattle did not play that well offensively. Seattle got 1 touchdown early, and then from that moment on, Philadelphia had 7 possessions before Seattle got in the end zone again on the long run by Rashad Penny. 7 possessions with a chance to tie or take the lead. And here's what they did. Carson Wentz fumble, Carson Wentz pick, 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, Carson Wentz fumble, and a 5-play, 11-yard drive that led to a punt. And then Seattle said, okay, if you're not going to take it, we, I guess, will. Rashad Penny goes for 60, and the game's essentially over at 17-3. The question I would have for folks, and again, I appear to have been very wrong on Carson Wentz. What does he do that's special? What is the thing that Carson Wentz does where you're like, wow, he's top 5 at that in the NFL? Because Bart, his MVP season, or his near MVP season, it was making plays off schedule.
Okay.
But in today's NFL, with Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and those guys and Russell, Carson Wentz is good at making plays off schedule, but he's no longer elite at that because the rest of the league's gotten better at it. So what does Carson Wentz do that's special? I can't find the thing right now, which to me is very surprising given how good I thought he was just 12 games ago.
I think what we're looking at is a team that's run out of moves, right? They've been one of the most active franchises in the past in bringing in and acquiring talent, bringing in talent. They go out, they bring Deshaun Jackson back. Yep. You know, they make the trade a couple years ago for Alshon Jeffries, and they always was acquiring talent. But I just feel like they're out of moves. They didn't have a move this season before the trade deadline. They lost Darren Sproles. You know, they lost a lot of talented players. Jay Ajayi, he left. They brought him back. And you look at, you're talking about his yards per attempt. Yeah. What'd you say, 7 yards?
Is yards per 10 right now or is it about 6.5 yards per 10?
Like 6.5.
30th in the NFL.
And most of those receptions go to who?
Tight ends.
Right. Zach Ertz, right? Zach Ertz, again, 3 games with 9 or more receptions. So you're not going to have a lot of, yardage, per temper isn't going to be up that way because he has no receivers.
Short passes.
All short passes. He has no receivers. Who's he throwing the ball to? You talk about the drops of his receivers. You talk about the inability of the receivers to get open. I think he is an elite talent. I just think that he's not surrounded around talent. Once again, another team that's linked to Antonio Brown because they understand that he doesn't have any talent around him. So he's carrying this football team, and this offensive line is getting older, and they're a little bit. This is their last chance. This is their last chance, and then they're out of the window because he's paid, and they're going to lose a lot of talented players. They've had injuries on the back end. You talk about Rashad Penny, what he was able to do. That's controlling the line of scrimmage. He had a career day, and the turnovers is because he's out of desperation trying to make plays off schedule, but he doesn't have anybody to be open. Just remember, we were just talking about Nelson Aguilar being trolled by the kid that was catching babies out of a building, and the first thing that he went to is the fact that Nelson Aguilar can't catch. No elite players at that end. So how does he score? How does he has to manufacture everything. Too much on his shoulders.
But yesterday he was missing 3 wide receivers. He was missing a running back. He was missing 2 offensive linemen. Could you say that maybe injuries have plagued this season?
Of course injuries have played a part of it. But then don't turn the ball over 4 times. Like if you're going to
what
have
does that
to
mean?
Play,
he's trying to do too much.
Whatever he's trying to do, it ain't working. and if you know you're going to have to play a game that 13 points might win, then and by the way, I understand Seattle ended up scoring 17, but that was after all of the turnovers. Then your number one job is take care of the football because this was one of Russell Wilson's worst games of the year.
Yeah.
Seattle, even the running game, the numbers look great because Rashad Penny popped that big one for 60 yards. Yeah. But that was after Philadelphia had chance after chance to win this game. But I don't want to put it all on Carson Wentz. There was also, to me, a moment at the end of the game that was odd. And you speak to this from a defensive player. Tell me if I'm reading too much into it. They're down 17-3 in the fourth quarter, and I am all for celebrations. I'm all for celebrating when you do something successful. I'm not the guy that gets mad at that. But when Philadelphia has been bad all year in a game that they have to have and they're losing at home, and you're down 17-3 and you pick off Russell Wilson with 8 minutes left in the game and you do the team photo in the end zone, that to me is a bit of an indictment on Doug Peterson. And I know we've said, oh, Philly's the fun team.
Right.
Well, that was maybe a little too much fun in the wrong circumstances. Do you think I'm wrong?
No, absolutely.
There?
I mean, you celebrate the interception because you're happy that you made a big play and potentially get your team back in it. But as far as the team photo, I think that's the most overdone thing right now in sports. They find the camera and they go and they do their own team celebration that they've been practicing on. If they've been doing a little bit more practicing, maybe they wouldn't be getting hit smash mouth in the mouth.
Well, and it's a bad photo because the photo I see is the screenshot from the actual broadcast, which shows all the Eagles celebrating. And it says on the bottom score, Seattle 17, PHI 3 with 8.5 minutes left. It's like the hell's going on here. And so Philly right now, the best thing Philly has going for it is that they're in the NFC East. And the best thing the Cowboys have going for it is they're in the NFC East. And Philly, by the way, Philly still might make the playoffs.
Oh, I'm picking them to win to win a division.
Because of who they have left on their schedule, but it won't be a long playoff life for whoever comes out of this division.
Meanwhile, lost in the Philly mess, the Seattle Seahawks are undefeated on the road so far this year. They are playing tremendous football. All right, let's talk about America's Game of the Week. Patriots hosting the Cowboys. An ugly, a rainy, a cold game in Foxborough. Tom Brady finished just 17 of 37 for $190, but found the rookie, N'Keal Harry, for his first career touchdown. New England squeaks out the win, 13-9. The Patriots are now 10-1. Here's Tom Brady after the game.
I think every team develops, at different times and so forth. I think we just take the challenges as they come. And try to do the best we can. So it was a great win. They're a good football team. And, happy we came away with more points than them.
Nick, every week going into a Patriots game, we say, okay, this is the week that the Patriots offense has to get it together. Tom Brady has to play like Tom Brady. And we come out of it, Patriots won, Brady didn't. Are the Patriots proving they can win a Super Bowl with a subpar Tom Brady?
Oh, they absolutely can win the Super Bowl with Brady playing this way. We saw it happen 4 years ago. That's how the Broncos won the Super Bowl. An all-time defense an all-time quarterback that was playing nothing like it, just holding on for dear life as the defense drug them across the finish line. So, yes, it can happen. But I have been 100% correct on this Patriots team. And folks that don't want to acknowledge that they are a team that is right now a passing offense away from being an all-time great team. And instead they are an all-time great defense and coaching unit being held back by a below average, well below average passing attack is lying to themselves. They've played three games this year, Bart, against teams that if the playoffs started today, they'd be in it, right?
Yep.
One, they lost to Baltimore. One, they beat Buffalo. Why? Blocked punt touchdown. In a game, they scored 16 points. The other one, Dallas. Why'd they win? Blocked punt that set up their only touchdown. In a game, they scored 13 points. Now, because the weather's getting bad, the Patriots are going to be the one or the two seed. Belichick, if they do get to the Super Bowl against a really good team, he's going to have 2 weeks to prepare. Like, you can't cross them off the list of Super Bowl contenders. They're 10-1. But right now, their quarterback and their passing game is the biggest weakness on their team. Just like it was for the 2015 Denver Broncos. Now, Peyton was playing far worse than Brady's playing right now. Yeah. But it's the same story. And that's not disrespectful to Peyton Manning. And it's not disrespectful to Tom Brady. It's just the only read you can get when you watch this team play, Bart.
They're so heavily flawed. And I think, you know, they're missing two players more than anybody. I think it's going to come back to bite them. I think Gronkowski, because, listen, I played with Nick Folk. He can be very streaky. He can be a good kicker, but he can be horrendous as well. And he missed two yesterday that you would think if that was Gronkowski that was healthy.
Oh, Gostkowski.
Gostkowski. I'm sorry, yeah. Gronkowski. You know, those would be, you know, you can write them and put them in the bank. Also, Devlin. Devlin and Gronkowski is really concerning for me because when you have an offense that really can't throw, when you go against elite teams that can really match up with you man-to-man like Baltimore on the outside, then you're going to struggle to run the football because you can't get the edges, you can't secure the edges. And Sony Michel, even though he has flashes, you really can't go out and ground and pound like we saw them ground and pound their way through the playoffs last year. So I'm concerned about this. Well, I'm not concerned because I'm not a Patriots fan. But, you know, I think that this is a heavily flawed team that could be, you know, one and done, you know, in week two of the playoffs.
Can Tom Brady not throw the ball, or does he have no one to throw the ball to at this
yes
point?
And yes.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, yes and yes, because when you think about Tom Brady, you think about the elements, and we talk about the weather conditions, and he's always had a strong arm that could throw and cut through the elements. I think that part of his game, like we saw Drew Brees last year, that arm looks tired and old, and he's really doing it with smoke and mirrors. That was a tremendous back shoulder fade, but that was more about touch than fitting it in tight windows. And teams, I believe, are going to start trying to challenge the Patriots at the line of scrimmage because they don't respect the fact that they have elite, you know, position players on the outside. So they're going to have to be able to beat man-to-man coverage. And a lot of times, Tom Brady can get them in the best plays and route combinations. But I don't think at this point he can really beat them with his arm, just his mind.
They cannot drive full fields for touchdowns. If you don't turn the ball over against the Patriots, they are scoring 3 points maximum the vast majority of the time. Hell, even after the Dak pick, they could only get 3 points. Yeah. Their only touchdown came on the super short field because of the blocked punt. And I understand that some of this is absolutely on the receiving corps. I get it. But one of the things that made Tom Brady so great among his many list of accolades is not only was he accurate, he was extra accurate. If the ball needed to be low and away to prevent you from taking a hit, that's where he delivered it. Now, I know early in the game, it was a lot of those passes were called drops. They were maybe drops, but they were passes that were missed, that were, especially in those conditions, going to be incredibly difficult catches for anybody, great wide receiver or not. They were high and outside when they didn't need to be. And we see him skipping passes into the dirt that otherwise wouldn't. Since week five, he hasn't had a single good football game.
Yeah.
Since week five, he hasn't had one good game. Over the course of the year, he's 27th in completion percentage. That is by Mitch Trubisky, who his team wants to bench. He's 28th in yards per attempt. That's behind Joe Flacco, who his team did bench. He's 21st in passer rating. That's by Marcus Mariota, who his team did bench. Brady is the greatest to ever do it. Right now, the passing game is the biggest weakness on the Patriots. Both those things can be true. They were true before yesterday, and they were true yesterday. If they had a good passing game yesterday, Bart, the Cowboys are never in this football game.
Well, the difference in this team is 28-10 turnover margin because they're good putting them on short fields and scoring touchdowns for them, and that's how they're winning ball games.
Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. All right, Brady had a tough game yesterday. So did Aaron Rodgers. Ooh. Green Bay in the Bay, and this was all Niners from the get-go. San Fran sacked Aaron Rodgers five times, pestered the heck out of the guy all night. Jimmy G, on the other hand, 14 for 20, 253 yards and two touchdowns. With his favorite target, George Kittle, hauling in six catches.
How does he get so open?
For 129 yards. And this, his first score since coming back from being injured. Niners win big 37-8. They improve to 10-1. Packers with the loss fall to 8-3. Here's Richard Sherman on his quarterback.
Jimmy Garoppolo is our leader, and we will follow him into the darkest of dark. We'll follow him into a dark alley, and I guarantee you won't touch him. Because you got guys that he goes to battle and to fight for us every day, and we have an obligation to go to battle and to fight for him.
We kind of thought the Chargers loss would be their one big disastrous loss of the season. Nick, do you have any doubts about the Packers after what you saw last night?
Last night was not good. This is my Super Bowl pick out of the NFC. They played a team that right now is the Super Bowl favorite out of the NFC, and they looked outclassed. And it's the worst game I've ever seen Aaron Rodgers play. Yeah. And
the worst game.
The worst game. He dropped back 38 times. They got 66 yards on those 38 dropbacks. If you take away the yards from sacks, and the first eight drives of the game, there's the strip sack, 6 yard, 1 yard, negative 3 yards, one extended drive, 52 yards, turnover on downs on that one, 0 yards, 4 yards, negative seven.
Wow.
And good night. Good luck. We'll see you next week. And this was a wildly important game for Green Bay. They're coming off a bye. The Niners have looked wobbly for a few weeks now. The Cardinals almost beat them. Then the Seahawks did beat them. Then the Cardinals had them beat until a great play at the end of the game by San Francisco. This was the time to get the Niners. They know they've got road games against Baltimore, New Orleans, and Seattle all still coming up. That they could go from the one seed to the five seed like that.
Yeah.
And Green Bay got mollywopped, an old-fashioned butt-kicking. And, I still think the Packers, at their best, can beat anybody. But they had an opportunity to show it last night, and this game was over 10 minutes in.
Yeah, styles make fights, and this just is a bad matchup. I think the better matchup is the Saints because they're a physical football team against that.
The Niners.
It's just... He struggled against teams that have guys who can get the pressure with you with four. And you can say that about any quarterback, right? But also that cover three where they're just kind of looking and lurking. And once again, when did Jimmy Graham become a bum? I've never seen a guy go from being one of the most biggest matchup nightmares in the game. He was Kittle's.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's just not elite. And now they need a second receiver. They gave up a lot to bring him there. And if you take Devontae Adams away, what can you do? And I just think that this offense has been, getting us with smoke and mirrors because of that defense has been so elite, getting turnovers and change of possessions. And they really haven't figured this thing out. They can't manufacture big plays. I'm sorry. They can't manufacture big plays. And you look at when the San Francisco 49ers have struggled, it's against teams that have mobile quarterbacks. And you think of Aaron Rodgers like that, but he really wasn't making plays and making them pay with that cover three, everybody dropping back. And he was trying to fit into tight windows. And those receivers, once again, can't get separation.
Aaron Rodgers said in that press conference, we were prepared. We were prepared all week. We were prepared in practice. Mentally, we were set. Physically, we felt good. So
they're just better.
Players, what does that mean they're just better? Some people think the Packers are just better than the 49ers. How do you come out with all that preparation?
Because they couldn't block them. Because they just couldn't block them. Like that game was won by the Niners defense.
The trenches.
And it was flatly. Now you can, to me, what the Packers allowed the Niners to do when the Niners had the ball,
yeah.
That's some real that shouldn't have happened. Emmanuel Sanders was there, but barely. He was clearly still dealing with an injury. Matt Breed is not playing.
Yeah.
Kittle is the only guy who can hurt you, and you let Kittle kill you. That can't happen. And I want to give credit to the Niners because they now put an enormous spot for them, and their first opportunity post Seattle to prove doubters like me, like, no, we are as good as our record says we are. But your point about matchups is the key one. If this game happens in the postseason, I still think the Packers can make the Super Bowl. But I think they have to avoid the Niners on the path because you're not getting new offensive linemen. And that Niners front won this football game. That's all it was. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo, I want to give him credit. He played very, very well.
Yeah.
But he didn't have to play well because of how great that Niners D front was. And they didn't even have D Ford yesterday.
I've been that team before. I mean, that type of team makes you make decisions, business decisions.
You've been which side?
I've been San Francisco, a physical football team, and the Green Bay Packers aren't designed to beat physical football teams. They can't really stop the run up the middle because they're light, and they have to beat teams that are more finesse teams because they really are a finesse team that are built to play from ahead and let those pass rushers on defense and those corners on the outside stop you. They're not a team that's going to stop you at the point of attack. When we've seen them struggle, they struggle against teams that can run the football. You've seen them struggle against Philadelphia Eagles early in the season where they just got hit in the mouth.
All right, big win for San Francisco. 10-1 record. Best team in the NFC.
Should be 10-0-1 if they'd have just taken
the tie. I know. Fun morning here on First Things First. It's going to be more fun in about 3 seconds when we introduce former NFL head coach Funny Man Eric Mangini.
Funny Man.
Coach once got insulted that we didn't call him the funniest guest we've ever had on the show. Sorry, I had to pull back the layers and to let people know that you are actually
are. Did you tell him who was the funniest man?
You were the funniest.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. I paid her.
We did once have a professional comedian named Hannibal Buress on the show. I think he'd probably be the funniest
guy.
Yeah. The fact that I've never heard of him lets me know.
You know Hannibal Buress. I'll show you his picture. You know, Rob Riggle's been on the show. I thought Ryan Hollins' basketball takes were funny.
I'm here every morning.
I kid Ryan Hollins because he's my friend.
Here we go, Coach. Dak Prescott and the Cowboys taking on Tom Brady and the Patriots in Foxborough. Picked this up in the first quarter. No score. Brady looking for the rookie. N'Keal Harry, his first career touchdown. Nice job, kiddo. It was a beauty. Pats take a 7-0 lead. Jump to the fourth. Cowboys down 4, driving. Dak finds Ezekiel Elliott for the first down, but Dallas penalized for a questionable tripping call. They actually had 2 tripping calls in this game. Couple plays later, Dak to Amari Cooper, who was having a very slow afternoon on 4th and 11. Big first down, but the play is reviewed. The ball clearly hits the ground here. Turnover on downs. 0 catches for Amari on the day. Patriots holding on for the 13-9 win. All right, Nick, let's start with you, and let's start with the Cowboys. Who do you blame for their loss in this one?
I know a ton of people are going to blame the officials. And that tripping call, both of them were egregious. The one at the end, particularly because of the time score situation of it. And it reminds you a little bit of, if you remember 2 months ago, the Detroit-Green Bay game on national television, where they kept calling incorrectly hands to the face. But the difference was, had they not called that against Detroit, Detroit was in position to win that game. If they don't call that tripping call against or at the end of this football game, the Cowboys still got to go 70 yards or 67 yards, I think it was 63 yards, in order to score a game-winning touchdown, and they hadn't been able to score a touchdown all game. So, yeah, the officiating was bad again, fine. The NFL deal with it in the offseason. Why were you in that position? Why in a game where New England has 0 elongated touchdown drives? They had 1 touchdown drive, and it was after a blocked punt. Shocker, New England whooped them in special teams. And, Coach, you tell me, special teams, I've always been told, is a reflection of coaching. That more so than anything else on the field, the special teams, not just special teams coach, but the way the team is coached from the top down. And when you get so confused by the Patriots punt team, that you take a delay a game, that you then get an illegal motion penalty that changes field position by 20 yards, which, by the way, leads to one of New England's three field goals on the day. You look at it, two field goals on the day, two made field goals on the day. You have to say, even before Jason Garrett inexplicably kicks a field goal on 4th-and-7 when you're down 7 late in the fourth quarter, that if I'm dishing out blame, the Cowboys coaching staff has to get the lion's share of it, to my eye.
Well, with special teams, it's always been a priority for Bill Belichick, whether it's when he was in Cleveland or when we were in New England. He's going to draft players that are core special teams players. He's going to build the back end of the roster and the guys that the back end of the group that actually makes it to the game that are going to be core contributors to special teams. So there's no secret that that's always been a priority for him, and he puts a lot of emphasis on it in practice as well. So they're going to have an advantage there. You know, the confusion that Dallas had was surprising. But to me, offensively, the fact that they couldn't get Amari Cooper involved at any level was shocking. And look, Julian Edelman gets doubled. A lot of receivers get doubled. And I'm not advocating forcing the ball to someone, but you've got to be able to design some plays to where he has a chance to beat double coverage. Over routes are always a good answer. But besides that, if you sit back and you let New England dictate the terms of the game, you have no chance. You can't be stationary and you can't be lack creativity so that they can just do whatever they want to do. And it surprises me week in and week out where teams try that model against them and are surprised that they're not successful.
Give an example of what you're talking about. Where did they lack creativity? Where did they not play their game
The greatest example of someone that used to give us a hard time was Mike Shanahan, because every single time you played him, it was what your weakness was. He was able to attack that weakness, and he'd do it the whole game. It could be 50 snaps of empty. It could be 50 snaps of big people, 22 personnel. And then you get the teams that come out and say, we're going to do what we do. We're going to get in 2x2, and we're going to run these routes, and maybe this week we'll motion to 3x1. And it's so vanilla that defensively you tee off on what they're doing. And now, instead of forcing New England to go to their sideline and say, hey, we got to stop this, we got to do this, make adjustments based off what the Cowboys are doing, they're just talking about how they're going to attack the next time they run that defense.
Yeah, the execution type of offenses or programs say, we're going to do what we do, and you don't give them opportunity to have to adjust anything, so they're able just to get in a good rhythm. You know, all you have to do is go back to the Baltimore game. You saw the different personnel groups. You saw the different ways that you attack and build things off of it. You know, when we used to go against New England, what they used to do with us, because we were a heavy base type of man-to-man team, they would put Wes Walker in the backfield. So then now you have a corner in the box trying to figure out what they're going to do, and then you got them running into linebackers. I didn't see any of that creativity that we have heard about, you know, the Dallas Cowboys with all the shifts and motions that they had been doing. We call it the window dressing. They didn't give him any window dressing, and they didn't find a way to get not only for him to catch a ball, but he only had two targets, you know, when you talk about Amari Cooper. So you got to do a better job in trying to make the Patriots have to think about some things, and they didn't do that.
And the Baltimore example is a great example of what gives Tom problems. It's disguising, it's guys walking around, it's overload blitzes. It's not things that you just come up to the line of scrimmage and you get a pre-snap read. Everything is post-snap, and things don't look the same down in, down out, and that now makes you uncomfortable and forces you have to adjust.
And I hate to just bang on coaching, and I especially hate to do it when coach is sitting right here, because I know you think I probably do that too often, but this game in particular, all of us knew that New England's kicking it short. Troy is on the broadcast saying, guys, they're kicking it short. Why are you in the end zone? And guess what happens? They damn near fumble the ball back. They couldn't even field the kick. All of us knew that the Patriots were going to try in given spots, because they've done it throughout the season, to bring pressure on a punt. And the only thing New England's not returning punts for touchdowns. They're blocking punts for touchdowns. And you don't have Matthew Slater, one of the best special teams players over the last decade.
Steve Tasker.
Right, you don't have him blocked. And then at the end of the game, the situational coaching is, to me, inexplicable, except I can explain it because I've been watching Jason Garrett. A few weeks ago, you didn't understand the flow of the game, that Dak was playing one of his best games, Zeke was not, and you took the ball out of Dak's hands. Conversely, this week, Zeke, when they went to heavy personnel, when they either brought in an extra offensive lineman or had two tight ends on the field, New England had no answers. After the big Randall Cobb play, you need to, as a coaching staff, say, we are going to go heavy. We are in four down situation where we 3 yards per carry will work, and we are feeding Zeke. They have a first and 10. They give the ball to Zeke. It's 3 yards. That's fine. Second down, you throw to Witten, who played one of his worst games of the season, and that's saying a lot. And then on third down, on third and seven, because evidently you're not going for it on fourth down, even if you pick up a few yards, you throw it out the back of the end zone. So you kick a field goal there, which is great because you were down a touchdown, and now you're down a touchdown. And that is, to me, the vintage example of coaching not to lose. In fact, let me amend that. Coaching to delay losing instead of coaching to win. Because you kicked a field goal on the fourth and seven inside the 20, you now have to go for a fourth and 11 on your own side of the field 4 minutes later because you're out of options. That, to me, that can't happen.
Well, look, in fairness, from a coaching perspective, how many more coaches can they fire in Dallas? I mean, they fire coaches pretty much every year. They
except,
I guess,
for one.
I understand, but they've turned that over quite a bit. And the field goal, when they took the field goal, when they did, it's one of those things where you kick it and then you have one of the top ranked defenses in the league. You figure that they're going to go out and be able to stop them. But if they don't, it is an insurance policy. If New England goes down and kicks a field goal, you still have a chance to be in that game. If you go for it on fourth and seven, New England gets a drive and kicks a field goal, the game's effectively over.
Right, but I guess my argument, my pushback there, the problem would be is you have to know that if they were down six, I feel very differently. If they're down six, where now a field goal cuts it to one field goal, what were the odds that Dallas, who over the first 56 minutes of the game had not been able to drive the ball on an extended drive throughout the entire game, was going to, in a 2 minute offense situation where New England knows what you have to do, going to be able to drive the length of field? Because they did get that stop. They got the stop they wanted to get to where a touchdown could win, and they end up throwing an incomplete pass on fourth and 11.
Well, you're trusting Dak Prescott, right, who was one of the hottest quarterbacks coming into this week, throwing for over 800 yards in the last 2 weeks. And, you know, things change. You can be struggling as an offense the entire game, but, you know, you talk about 2 minute situational football, you have a mobile quarterback with a big arm, with a lot of weapons. Maybe he can make something happen. So you wanted to give him a legitimate chance to prove that this is his team, that he can be an elite quarterback. He just didn't show up.
You don't have to read between the lines after the game to hear what Jerry Jones had to say to know that he's about as frustrated with this team right now as Nick seems to be. Nick, is it starting to look like Carson Wentz isn't the quarterback Philly thought he was?
He's starting to look like he's not the quarterback I thought he was, and certainly would appear not the quarterback Philly thought he was when they gave him that contract extension. And this is where I have to turn to you and give Coach Mangini tremendous credit for a holistic, not just about Carson Wentz, but general opinion of, we anoint these guys too early. What he did in year two was very impressive. Would like to see him in different circumstances. Would like to see him when adversity hits. Would like to see him in the playoffs, which is something we haven't seen yet from Carson Wentz. And this year we might not see it given how he's played and how the team's played. Because much like I thought with Baker after year one, and Baker I'm still holding on hope to, and I thought with Carson Wentz after year two, well, these are foundational franchise quarterbacks that are going to be playing top 10 in the league for a decade plus. Like, I saw them do it this early in their career. Why would they go backwards? And Carson Wentz has clearly gone backwards in everything. Last year, I said, you know what, sometimes even Brady, the year after the ACL, that was 2008, was the worst year he had for the better part of the next decade. And I think a lot of it was because he was not fully himself a year removed from the knee injury. Well, that was last year for Carson Wentz. He's now well more than a year removed from the knee injury. And he has been bad by any measure. And I understand that the Eagles have had other things working against them. But one of the things working against them is the best player on their team has not, the guy who's supposed to be the best player on their team, has not played like it. And you now, you're about to have a sample size of Carson Wentz bad football that equals the sample size of Carson Wentz MVP level football.
And what happens with quarterbacks is, you have to see him in all the different situations. You've got to see him in a playoff type situation, which we hadn't seen Carson. How do they handle adversity? Are they able to help pull the team out of it? Or is it something that sends them into a spiral? The other issue with Carson has always been injury. So last year he was 5-6 when he got injured. Now he's 5-6 and he's injured again. You know, can he actually last throughout the course of the season? And the dynamic in the locker room, and we go back to this all the time because of how adamant they were that they had a style in Philadelphia that could be successful year in and year out without the same grind that you see in New England. And there was that mocking of New England for their approach and their work ethic and the seriousness with which they took every game. And it wasn't fun. And I can tell you this environment is not fun. And that's okay. They can work through this. They can push through this. But it's not going to come from pointing blame. It's going to come from taking accountability, taking a step back, and figuring out, okay, where do we go from here?
I just see a team that has ran out of moves, right? You talk about a team that's been super transactional, right? That's, you know, they use their draft equity. They spend a lot of money. They guarantee money, you know, move money and play the salary cap game. And they just ran out of moves. Now you look at this roster, who's he throwing to? Alshon Jeffries is hurt. DeSean Jackson isn't available. Darren Sproles is done for the year. So now they don't have guys that can win in elite spaces. You got guys that really can't really like create space for themselves. So when I'm looking at the film, I'm looking at Carson Wentz dropping back and he's having to eat the ball because guys just aren't getting open. So, I mean, you can blame him a little bit, but, you know, every quarterback's going to struggle when you're getting pressure from the defensive line without the Damon Clowney. You look at Ziggy Ansah, had 1.5 sacks, and he had to eat the ball. I think they have to do a better job in trying to find an answer. That's why we hear them rumored with Antonio Brown, because of the fact that they need somebody that can win at the line of scrimmage that doesn't have to be, you know, set up by play design or trickery or anything like that.
I don't think you can just brush off the fact that he has no one to throw to and no one's running the ball and two of his offensive linemen are down. I understand.
That's a factor against a good football team.
And a lot of quarterbacks are decimated with injuries on that offense, but he really hasn't had anyone to throw to besides Zach Ertz the whole season.
Yeah, neither is Russell Wilson. And he's playing like an MVP candidate. I mean, we can't do this with guys we like and guys we don't.
Are we putting him in Russell Wilson's class?
Because well, we did this with Dak Prescott, that we didn't know who Prescott was until they got Amari Cooper. I mean, can you say the same thing about Carson Wentz?
Right. Well, okay, but if you are, and again, I'm going to steal from Coach again. If you are someone mm-hmm. that can only play well, if you have elite talent around you, then you are not the guy you were made out to be.
Didn't I mean, see Aaron Rodgers struggle last year?
Aaron Rodgers, absolutely. And I think that was, and Aaron Rodgers was terrible last night after being great thus far this season. But Aaron Rodgers, to me, had two things going for him. One, he had a decade of success that made last year seem like an outlier. Two, he got injured in the very first game of the year, which clearly helped affect him the next 6 weeks. And I'll add a third one. To me, that got placed on Mike McCarthy fairly, that scheme had run stale. But we have seen the best quarterbacks in football do not need elite weapons all over the field. And again, you might need elite weapons all over the field if you want to have numbers similar to Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, as great as Mahomes is, part of what helps him is all those weapons. But Carson Wentz right now is 30th in the league in yards per attempt. He's 20th in passer rating. He's 21st in completion percentage. He's 22nd in yards per game. He is behind. All those guys have been benched this year. And so, like, it can't – if he were just having, an average season, then you'd say, okay, if he had the weapons, he would be having a really good season. But he's having a terrible season.
And let's just start with the 4 turnovers. Just start there. So don't even go make a ton of plays. Just don't be responsible for 4 turnovers, because you've got pretty much zero chance of winning a game when you have that many turnovers. And in terms of him being a force multiplier, that's the hope. When you pay these guys these gigantic contracts, you're hoping that they can take a N'Keal Harry and make him better. You're hoping that when you've got to play another rookie wide receiver and he can go in and have 4 catches or whoever's in the game, you can get the most out of him by what you do. And if you have to constantly support these guys with elite talent, they're probably not worth an elite contract. those other guys that are supporting him are worth the elite contracts.
Except Dak Prescott needed the elite talent to
because
warrant
his. Because he ain't great either.
But he's going to make more money than anyone else in the league
right,
as a quarterback.
Because the quarterback money's gone crazy. But the argument of, well, but Dak needed it too, I don't think is a great argument just because I don't think Dak is one of these, as great as he's been this year, I don't think he's one of these top flight, gotta have, gotta pay $35 million a year quarterbacks.
It's only like four of those in the league though.
All right, guys, time now for Drawing a Blank. Here we go. Jimmy G carried the Niners to a blowout win over the Packers last night, finishing 14 of 20. He had 253 yards and two touchdowns. But Bart, will let you decide. The most impressive individual performance on Sunday was blank.
I'm going to go Drew Brees. On a day where clearly the defense didn't have their best stuff, he was able to manufacture a game-winning drive. I think his 36th fourth-quarter game-winning drive. And we knew there was no doubt once that field goal was missed that he was going to get his guys in position to win the game. I think they're the best team in the NFC, the most complete team in the NFC, and eventually this defense will get back to playing elite like it was early in the year.
Yeah, I really liked Derrick Henry yesterday. 8.4 yards a carry, 160 yards, two touchdowns, and just the physical way that he plays and the tone that he sets, it's impressive.
Your friend Mike Vrabel has the Titans in it once again, a team nobody talks about, and Coach might have been the only person in America watching the Titans yesterday during Cowboys-Patriots, but I'm glad you gave him a shout-out. I'm going to go to Baker. The Browns absolutely had to have it. Baker was sensational, 320 yards, three touchdowns, found Odell in the end zone for the first time since week two against the Jets, a 119 rating. As the Browns set up, as you mentioned, Bart, what's going to be a hotly contested, tempers flaring rematch with the Pittsburgh Steelers here in a week with maybe that second AFC wildcard spot on the line, but the Titans will have something to say about that as well.
All right, from the good to the bad, Carson Wentz finished with a career-high four turnovers against Seattle. Eagles lose 17-9. They dropped to 5-6 on the season. So, Bart, the most disappointing loss yesterday was blank.
Has to be the Oakland Raiders coming all the way across town. You talk about Derek Carr completing 74% of his passes going into the game, you know, playing the New York Jets. You know, for him to get benched in the third quarter, I mean, you talk about the 30-burger put up by the Jets and a dominant performance. You know, you got to go with them because all that they had in stake, an opportunity to really position themselves for the wild card. They were in the wild card, in the sixth seed, but opportunity to maybe compete for the division, it has to be the Oakland Raiders.
Just real quick on that, it sure seemed like the Raiders were looking ahead. Next week, they're in Kansas City. It would have been 7-4 versus 7-4, division potentially on the line, and they lay an egg beforehand.
Yeah, look, it's hard traveling across the country and playing those early games, but for me, it was the Packers, and they're traveling across the country, and the last time they didn't do very well, and they said they had a better week of practice, a better week of preparation. They come out and start the game the way that they do, and it was disappointing across the board just because Aaron Rodgers, they were dominated defensively. Their offense was dominated by San Francisco's defense, and Aaron Rodgers had no chance throughout that game to get anything going.
I'm with you on the Packers because of the missed opportunity. Since Aaron Rodgers has been the quarterback, the Packers have been one of the best teams in football, we think. And the Niners have had one good stretch of football. Yet over that stretch of time, they have the same number of first-round buys, the same number of conference championship game appearances, the same number of Super Bowl appearances. Green Bay obviously won theirs. Yep. San Francisco lost theirs. And now the Niners are the team positioned for a first-round bye. Green Bay is the team that's positioned to once again have a very difficult road to the Super Bowl. And by the way, they now have the same record as the Minnesota Vikings, and Green Bay all of a sudden could be the 5 seed if they drop another game. So the Packers, and because they were just annihilated. For all those reasons, I say Green Bay. I agree with Coach.
All right, move on to the New England Patriots. It was a wet game. It was an ugly game. It was a cold and windy game in Foxborough, but Tom Brady and the Patriots did what they do best. They just won the game, taking down the Cowboys 13-9. Bart, the best team win yesterday was blank.
I'm going to go to Seattle Seahawks. You know, talk about teams that struggle going across country. Well, this is a team that didn't. You know, you look at what they were able to do in running the ball and finding ways to win. You know, without their best defensive player in Jadeveon Clowney, Ziggy Ansah stepped up, turned the clock back a little bit, got 1.5 sacks, and they harassed him, was able to get 4 turnovers, put their team on short fields and make the game-winning plays. Got to go to Seattle.
Yeah, to me, it's got to be the Patriots. And I hear people talk about New England's victories, and they say, well, it wasn't pretty, or they had to use a trick play, or whatever the case. It doesn't matter how you get the victory. It's collective, and they were able to gain an edge on special teams yesterday. Tom's playing again with two receivers that really are getting some of their first work, N'Keal Harry getting his first work. It's just impressive the way that they're able to collectively come together and find a way to win, and it's going to not always be pretty, but it doesn't have to be pretty.
Yeah, because the question is best team win, it has to be New England. Because once again, they won a game despite their passing attack giving them nothing. They manufactured points, block a punt, force a turnover, win the field position battle, do all the little things that you have to do against a theoretically good opponent in Dallas when your passing game can bring nothing to the table. So I give credit to the Patriots defense, their coaching staff, their special teams, all of it, because that was a team victory because of what they had to offset in the passing game.
How long can they get away with this?
Well, look
what they've done so far.
No, I understand that. But
it's one of those things where they never look back, so they'll just look forward and figure out the formula for that one game.
Nick, you've been banging on this drum all morning. Should the Cowboys move on from Jason Garrett?
Yes, and the more I think about it, I don't think they should wait till this offseason. Now, I don't think they're going to do it.
Really?
But I see no reason not to just fire him now. Chris Richard, who right now is a basically redundant position because he's not the defensive coordinator, but he kind of is the defensive coordinator. He's a guy who people think could be a head coach one day in this league. He can lean on some of the other coaching experience on the staff. Make him your interim head coach and see if it gives this team an injection. Because you know you're moving on from Jason Garrett after this year, and you know the Cowboys, as presently constituted, cannot go at least a round further than they did in last year's postseason, which is what this year was all about. So at this point, you need, one of the reasons you mentioned with Philly, maybe they'll bring in Antonio Brown. Like, the teams, there aren't a lot of cards you can play at this point to make you different than you've been through 12 weeks of an NFL season. Firing your head coach, Mike. And it's a last resort, I get it. And there's not a lot of instances, as I've said before, of interim head coach leads team on playoff run, I understand that. But because of the division that you're in, you still have the playoffs in front of you. I believe Jerry Jones already made his decision. I believe Jerry Jones, Bart, knows he's not renewing Jason Garrett's contract after this season. So what's the argument against firing him right now?
Well, you do that before getting rid of the special teams coach?
Well, that's
tomorrow, today.
That's just one bad play by a coach. I mean, I think what Nick is alluding to is just a pattern of just mediocrity. When you look at Jason Garrett, he's been there 10 years. He's only won three playoff games out of his five, but he's only got a team there that we've thought has had one of the best rosters. He's not a guy that's elevating the talent around him. He's a guy that, you know, just kind of stabilized the water. He's not good, not bad. You know, he keep the team about 500, and that's not what you pay him for. So usually when you look at it, like I used to always look at Tampa Bay, and when they got rid of Dungy, they brought a guy with an edge and Gruden. He got the W, got him over the hump. They need somebody that can get them over the hump, because the fact that they can't beat a team above 500 is alarming to me. The fact that they can't go out and win games, you know, the 50-50 games. You know, we want to anoint Dak and say that, you know, he's a guy that should be the highest paid, you know, quarterback in the league. But where's his, look at his resume. This team is all in. And the fact that he's a lame duck coach, the fact that they didn't give him an extension, usually they give a guy at least a one-year extension. So if he gets fired, he has one more year of being able to look for money with pay. Tells you a lot. It tells you everything. And I think in Texas, when you think about Lincoln Riley being there, you think about Matt Rhule being there, I think he's looking at somebody that can come and maybe try and get the best out of Dak Prescott, because they're going to lose a lot of elite players. And you look at this offensive line, Tyron Smith is getting older. A lot of this talent on this core is starting to age, and they're going to age themselves right out of their window.
This is one of the best coaching jobs in sports. You have an owner that will spend as much money as they are allowed to. You have the best facilities in the world. You are on television more than any other team. I know all NFL teams are on television every week, but you're on national television.
Yeah, big spot.
More than any other team. You have the biggest fan base. And you, the organization, when they've prioritized it, you want Jimmy Johnson, a great college coach, get him from the college ranks you can. They brought Bill Parcells out of semi-retirement, brought him in. They settled on Jason Garrett, and they've settled there for a decade. And so I just want to know the argument against moving on from him now. What is it? That they'll underachieve more? That they won't sneak into the playoffs at 9-7? You know Jason Garrett's not back next year.
It could create a spark, though. It could create a spark to your point where the teams kind of punch above their weight for a couple of weeks because they, you know, and you get new ideas. I just don't know if Broussard is the guy that you want to go with.
Well, I guess the other option would be Rod Marinelli. Right. My point is I don't know how much of a spark that brings, but you one of those two guys on the defensive side, because you obviously can't go to either guy on the offensive side.
Right.
Kellen Moore, he just got this job. He's not going to be ready to do that. So even if it is Marinelli, because he's been a head coach before, fine. But when you watch yesterday's game, it was so clear that the Cowboys were outcoached in every facet of it. They couldn't tell the kick returner, move up 10 yards.
Listen, it's not about that, because what happens is when they do the bloop kick, if you move them up, then they'll just kick it behind. The problem was they weren't prepared. They didn't anticipate the situation. The Patriots always do that. They never try and kick the ball through. And first of all, you got to understand, Nick Folk can't kick the ball through the end zone, especially in bad elements.
Not against the wind. But how about the play, not even the blocked punt, but when the Patriots line up in punt coverage and they have nobody deep and the Cowboys are so perplexed, they take a delay of game. Then the next play, they do the exact same thing. They're still perplexed. They motion the guy in late. They end up erasing a really good punt because there's nobody deep, so of course it's going to be a good punt. 20-yard field position difference. You know what that drive ended up resulting in for the Patriots? A field goal. A critical field goal. One of the reasons the Cowboys were down 7 late instead of being down 4 late. The Cowboys could have lost yesterday's game, and you wouldn't blame Jason Garrett. There were ways for that to happen. But when you look at it, it's like, oh, exactly what the entire football world was saying leading up to the game. Cowboys got more talent. Cowboys need the game more. Patriots have been shaky, especially offensive the last few weeks. But the coaching discrepancy is so great, I think New England's going to win. And what we saw was the coaching discrepancy was so great, the Cowboys needed a furious comeback at the end to have a chance. And I know people are going to focus on the refs. The officiating was bad. Great. No problem. It's going to happen. You can't change that. You can change who the coach is. And if you know, I think Jerry Jones, when he gave that press conference to Bart, that was him in real time realizing, I'm moving on from my coach.
Yeah.
So the question is, why delay until the end of the year?
If I'm Jason Garrett, I'm going to make the case that maybe I should take over the offense so I can get more creative. I know we gave Kellen Moore a lot of credit, but the fact that he couldn't find a way to get his best player, Amari Cooper, the ball and only get him 2 targets could suggest that he can be the fall guy. And then listen, if it's going to be you or me, it's going to be you. And I'm going to make sure if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out on my shield and go out calling the plays and going down how I want to go down.
He's going to go out clapping. He's going to go out clapping.
He ain't played state taxes in 10 years, man. He's balling.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.